Then immediately curses him.
He blasphemes the Lord.
And he speaks many inappropriate words to Lord Shiva. And because of those inappropriate words, then he commits a great offence to Lord Shiva, and then he leaves the sacrificial arena. So after leaving the sacrificial arena, then Lord Shiva, his followers, headed by Nandishwara, begins to... Everyone's had too many drinks. Here's the problem. Because I'm trying to be serious, and all of you are trying to be serious, but when you have too much sweets, then this is rasa bus. So, I'll try my best to give fifth class, you know, but I had a lot of street time. So, we'll see how far we can get with the entire situation. So, because Daksha, he got confused.
Really?
And Daksha, they should have just given him some Shrikant. And said, what is the problem? Yeah, why do you have to get so serious, start cursing and counter cursing? Just sit down and have some prasad. What is the problem? But Daksha became very offended. He cursed Lord Shiva and then he left the sacrificial arena. So after leaving the sacrificial arena, then Nandishwara, who was the follower of Lord Shiva, then he cursed the brahmanas who had listened to the cursing of Daksha towards Lord Shiva. And then in defense of the brahmanas, then Bhrigu Muni begins to counter-curse the followers of Lord Shiva. So then there is cursing and counter-cursing going on in the arena. And it creates a very angry atmosphere. Prabhupada said one must avoid angry atmospheres. Because when one devotee becomes angry, then he curses one devotee, then the other devotee retaliates. And then they say things and do things which they would not normally mean or say. And then everything becomes very... Everyone becomes implicated in aparadha or offence. So we should be very careful of this kind of atmosphere arising. Right? If someone becomes very angry towards us, then what should we do? Should be tolerant. We should smile. That is the best.
In India, if you smile when they're angry, they say it's not funny.
If you smile when they're angry, they say it's not funny. In the West, they also do it. So, my personal policy is Shrikant. Just give some Shrikant. Say, don't worry about it so much. It's not so bad.
You
will
not come to the bed, you can show my
discipline. That's the special weapon. Yeah, that's the Brahmastra. Okay. So, they became very contaminated in their consciousness. They began to offend each other. So then, chapter 3 is called? Talks between Lord Shiva and Pati. So Lord Shiva, at the end of chapter 2, he sees what is going on, and he simply stands up and leaves in silent protest. He does not become involved in the cursing and the counter-cursing. That is the way a devotee should behave. We should not become implicated in the cursing and the counter-cursing like that. So then, Lord Shiva, he advises Sati in the beginning of chapter 3, do not go to the Jagya, because I will be offended and you will become offended because your father fails to give respect to me, and then it will become inauspicious for everyone. So he advises, do not go to the Jagya. So then Sati, she wants to go to the Jagya because she wants to defend the name of Lord Shiva because he's a pure devotee. So she does not want him to be slighted by Daksha. So then she attends the Jagya with Lord Shiva's followers. And she arrives at the Jagya, and in chapter 4 is called Sati quits her body. So in the beginning of chapter 4 she begins to chastise Daksha and correct him, try to change his mentality about his attitude towards Lord Shiva. But Daksha will not budge. She is unsuccessful, so she she performs sati sacrifice, which means she self-combusts or increases the heat within her body and burns her body to ashes. So then Daksha continues the jagya, because he's very hard-hearted. So then he continues the jagya, even though his own child has left her body. And then in chapter 5 is called?
Frustration
of the sacrifice of Daksha. Is that what chapter 5 is called?
Yes.
What is chapter 5?
Something about
frustration.
I don't know.
What is it?
Frustration of the sacrifice of Daksha.
What's that?
Frustration of the sacrifice of Daksha.
Frustration of the sacrifice of Daksha. So, Narad Muni, he tells Lord Shiva that Sati has left her body. So Shiva becomes extremely angry and he creates one demon called Virabhadra. With the hair from his head, he creates a huge demon. And that demon, he goes to the sacrifice of Daksha, the second sacrifice, which Lord Brahma and Lord Vishnu have not attended. And then that demon Virabhadra, he takes all the followers of Lord Shiva and they destroy the sacrificial arena and they decapitate or remove the head of Daksha. Virabhadra personally severs his head. And then after destroying the sacrificial arena, they all go back to Kailas, which is the abode of Shiva. So then chapter 6 is called?
Brahma
satisfies Lord Shiva. So then the devas, they are very concerned that they have committed a great offence to Lord Shiva. So they approach Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma says, let us go to Mount Kailas and speak to Lord Shiva and fall at his feet and beg forgiveness. So they all head towards Mount Kailas. So the description in the beginning of chapter 6 is the description as they approach Mount Kailas. And we see the beauty of Mount Kailas, how it's an incomparable mountain within this world. And then, at the end of the section we finished last week, they just came and they met Lord Shiva, who was sitting under a great banyan tree. And that banyan tree is?
40 miles tall.
How tall?
8 miles high.
How tall?
8 miles.
Not 8 miles. 800 miles. 800 miles. This is Lord Shiva's tree. So it's 800 miles tall, 600 miles in diameter. Huge, like that. So he is sitting there very peacefully under that tree. So tonight we'll continue from where the devas, they meet Lord Shiva, and Lord Brahma begins to speak with Lord Shiva. Tonight we'll go from verses 35 to 44. And then tomorrow night we'll finish chapter 6. And then next week we'll begin chapter 7, that is the final chapter before your exam. So the exam will be in about 3 weeks from now. Any questions, comments? Not 100% sure. It said that Brahma's body is made of buddhi. Yeah, or like buddhi, made of subtle form like that. The devas also have subtle form, more subtle than ours, but there must still be some trace of fire and so forth, otherwise. More subtle than our bodies, but maybe not completely subtle like that. I'm not sure of the exact constitution of their bodies. Any other points? So text 35. The demigod saw Lord Shiva situated in his perfection as the master of the senses, knowledge, fruitive activities and the path of achieving perfection. He was the friend of the entire world and by virtue of all of his full affection for everyone, he was very auspicious.
Lord Shiva is full of wisdom and tapasya is everything. One who knows the most of the world is understands to be situated on the path of the world, which is the most perfect. One who and cannot serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead unless one has achieved full perfection in order in the ways and means of performing the personal service. Lord Shiva is described here as Adishwara. Ishwara means controller. Adishwara means particularly controller of the senses. Generally, our materially contaminated senses are apt to engage in sense gratification activities. But when a person is animated by wisdom and austerity, the senses then become purified and will become engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Shiva is the emblem of self-perfection, and therefore, in the scriptures it is said, Krishna Vandanam Yatha Shambhu. Lord Shiva is a Vaishnava. Lord Shiva, by his action within this material world, he gives all conditioned souls how to engage in devotional service 24 hours a day. Therefore, he is described here as Loka Mangala, good fortune for sunburn for all conditioned souls.
What are the points here? Any other points?
When a person is advanced and he performs a lot of austerity, he gets purified. And we see the example of Shiva, who is the Vaishnava, who is the topmost Vaishnava, and performs a lot of austerities.
Any other points?
Lord Shiva is like a guru in the sense that he teaches people how to go to Krishna, go back to Krishna, how to become a person for the Krishna. His name also means all auspiciousness. Shiva means auspiciousness.
When you control the senses, then you become qualified to receive the transcendental knowledge, and as a result of that, you become friendly to all living entities, and you automatically become very peaceful, and you think that's very auspicious for you. So, these points are really for you to put down the translation, control of the senses, knowledge.
So we see, when you look at the Sanskrit, vidya, tapo, yoga, patam. So, tapo, vidya. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he recites one verse in glorification of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He says, vairagya, vidya, nija, bhakti, yogena. Which means that Lord Chaitanya came to teach devotional service which is enriched with vairagya, vidya. Vairagya means?
Renunciation,
detachment, and vidya?
Knowledge.
So this is the mood of the sampradaya of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Gaudiya sampradaya. We perform our devotional service, which is enriched with renunciation and knowledge. Meaning that if one is sincerely performing devotional service to Krishna, to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then the natural byproduct of his devotional service was one would become detached or renounced. That is the natural byproduct of devotional service, which is stated by the Bhagavatam. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Priyojita Janaya Yashu Vairagyam Yanam Chayat Ahoitukam. That one will automatically become detached from the material world. That means that if your devotional service is sincere and being done properly with the proper motivation, right? If you have a sincere motivation in your devotional service, you'll automatically become detached from this world. Right? And you'll develop knowledge. In other words, you'll develop realization of Krishna. The Krishna will become more and more realized or understood by you. Right? The more that you do your devotional service sincerely, then the more you'll understand devotional service. As Krishna says, Satatam? No, wrong verse. That's the one I'm thinking of. Chatur Shloki. Yeah, Tesham Satata Yuktanam.
Bhajatam Priti Purvakam Tadami Buddhi Yogantam Yenamam Ubiyantite. So if one sincerely serves Krishna, right, then Dadami Buddhi Yoga Tam. Krishna gives Buddhi Yoga, or he gives realization or knowledge about himself. You develop realization about Krishna. You understand Krishna within your heart. That is the sign of devotional service being executed properly. You'll get more realizations. You'll read the Bhagavatam and you'll get realizations from the Bhagavatam. So this is the result of performing devotional service. So Lord Shiva is teaching this. He's teaching us how to perform austerity. Tapo Divyam. Austerity for the satisfaction or for the purpose of pleasing Krishna. One must perform austerity to satisfy Krishna. If we perform austerity which is outside of satisfying Krishna, then that is Shrama Ebihi Kevalam. That is a useless waste of time. But we must perform austerities which give satisfaction to Krishna. It satisfies Krishna that we rise early. We attend Mangalati. Right? We take our bath even though it may be cold. We chant our 16 rounds with attention. We attend the morning program. This austerity, although it may be some austerity, but it gives satisfaction to Krishna. And as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, it may be like poison in the beginning, but it becomes like nectar in the end. And if you perform these austerities for the satisfaction of Krishna, what is the result? You develop a taste for that activity, and then it doesn't become an austerity. You enjoy getting up early. You want to go to Mangalati. You want to do all these different activities for the pleasure of Krishna. And it no longer is an austerity. It is a transcendental austerity, which is done for his satisfaction. So Lord Shiva is teaching real devotional service in the line of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Tapo Divyam. And then it says, Yoga Patam. They saw that he was the master. They saw his perfection as the master of the senses, knowledges, fruited activities, and the path of achieving perfection. So an advanced devotee understands how to elevate others. Lord Shiva is known as Yoga Patam, which means he understands the path of devotional service. He understands how to elevate others. Right? An advanced devotee understands how to engage others so that they become purified. So that gradually they can elevate themselves in Krishna consciousness. So Lord Shiva has this exalted qualification that he understands how to advance all those around him. So he's attracted so many exalted personalities who are sitting with him. And he is giving discussion, as we see in this section, and instructing them how to advance in Krishna consciousness. So therefore we have to seek out the association of personalities like Lord Shiva, who are following in the footsteps of Lord Shiva, who can help us to understand how to purify ourselves in devotional service. Now in the second paragraph, Prabhupada explains to us that we need wisdom and austerity to purify the senses. So this means that we have to study Prabhupada's books. Because by studying Prabhupada's books, what is the result? Our intelligence becomes purified. And when our intelligence is purified, then we can engage ourselves in a fixed way in Krishna's service. We don't become so allured by Maya. Otherwise we become distracted by Maya continuously. But if you study Prabhupada's books, then your intelligence becomes very fixed, very strong. And you won't deviate. You won't become so distracted by Maya. So therefore Prabhupada recommends that we have to study and perform tapasya. We have to perform some austerity, which means we have to put some effort into our devotional activities. Right? Our material activities must be secondary in our life. Not that the material activities overcome the spiritual activities, which happen so often. That the devotees become too much caught up in the material side of life.
Right? And then they did not have time to perform their devotional activities properly. This should not become their habit. Right? The habit of the devotees should be that the spiritual activities are foremost. They are primary, and the material activities are secondary. They are not principal. So devotees have to have this balance. The Lord Shiva is the perfect acharya. So he is giving instruction to the devotees to live in this way. Cultivate knowledge and perform some austerity for Krishna's pleasure, and this will purify the consciousness. Any questions or comments so far? Yes, sir. So it means that there's different levels of consciousness, but actually to serve Krishna means you have to have bhava or prema. Because Rupa Goswami explained there's sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, prema bhakti. So actually you begin devotional service when you develop bhava and then prema bhakti. Then you're actually serving Krishna. So you can understand things in different levels. Yeah, we're doing sadhana. Sadhana means practice. We're practicing to serve Krishna. We serve the Asya Vigraha, we serve the deity of Krishna, but we're practicing to serve Krishna. In one sense, we're not actually serving Krishna yet. In another sense, we are. Krishna is accepting our service in the form of the deity. But in another sense, we're not actually serving Krishna yet, because we haven't awoken our lost relationship with Krishna. We're not serving Krishna with that loving feeling in that particular rasa or that mood, which is our... Not that. So it depends which level you're taking on. Is that okay?
Any devotee of Lord Shiva, not a real devotee, the real devotee of Lord Shiva will be a devotee of Krishna, but the fanatics, if they argue with us from this verse, saying that Lord Shiva is Adishwara, he is the control of the senses, and then you are saying that Rishikesha is the control of the senses, how do we reconcile that?
That Prabhupada mentions it. Is it in that purport or the next one? Prabhupada explains in the next. He explains about Shiva being Yogeshwara and Krishna being Yogeshwara in the next couple of purports. So one is the devotee and one is the Lord. Okay. In the original form, Prabhupada explains, in the original form they're both the Lord. But then in this form of coming as Shiva within this material world, as Shambhu, then he is seen to be a devotee of the Lord. So both have the title Yogeshwara, which means master of the senses or master of yoga. But one is the Lord, one is the devotee. Does that make some sense? Yeah, I mean that's the proper tattva of the proper Siddhanta. You know, if they say that Shiva is supreme, right, then you have to say, where is that authorized? Yeah? Because according to the Bhagavatam, yeah, Krishna is still Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is the original supreme personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada explains this in the Bhagavad Gita. He quotes verses that prove that only Vishnu himself can give liberation, not Shiva, not Brahma. Does that answer more?
Shiva controls his own senses because he's engaged in the service of the Lord, and he wants to have that with him. He wants control of his own senses because he's more in depth service of that. Like plumbing the same service.
Yeah.
So we know that from this name is Trayo, this kind of actor, the most enlightened transcendental knowledge of the super soul within the heart. How does Shiva get his enlightenment? It comes in the form of devotion. Who becomes Shiva's soul? And who enlightens him?
Good
Brahma, at least within the material world when he appears, then Brahma is his father or his guru. Same as the Kumaras and the others, they all took birth from Brahma, so they seem to be, Brahma is seen to be the guru or the father of them, within the material world. Because Shiva's position is eternal, and he is the Lord himself, at least his original form. So when he comes here, then he takes the position of being the son of Brahma, so in that way. Yeah, like that. I'm just saying that because I haven't heard specifically who he took instruction from, but in terms of being the son of Brahma, then we can take it that he took some instruction from Brahma. Someone's an eternally self-realized soul, personality. So when he comes to this material world, then he takes the position of being subordinate to someone else, or Brahma like that. But then it says in the sixth canto, he worships Sankarshan. It says that in the sixth canto, so he may have. No, it's a different type of knowledge like that. There's knowledge of karma, which means knowledge of fruitive activities, right? And then there's knowledge of jnana, which means an impersonal type of knowledge, and then there's knowledge of bhakti. But that knowledge is transcendental, it's divya jnana. So it's not a material type of knowledge. So when it says that kind of knowledge strengthens our bhakti, it's not material like that. All of them. Sambandha, Abhideya, Parojana. Yeah, but all of them. You need all the knowledge in order to understand Krishna. You need knowledge of Sambandha, knowledge of Abhideya, and knowledge of Parojana. Then it's complete.
So knowledge in the sense
he's
talking about
only
the bhakti, knowledge of bhakti.
Yeah, of course. What else is he? No, what else is it? What is knowledge of bhakti? Knowledge of bhakti comes from the bhakti shastras. What is the bhakti shastra? That is the Srimad Bhagavatam. So what we're doing now, we're cultivating knowledge of Krishna. That's why we study. That's why we listen to lectures. That's why we read Prabhupada's books. Because we get knowledge of Krishna. That is bhakti.
But aren't there people or great devotees who haven't gone through me?
Yeah, that's possible. Prabhupada explains that in the Bhagavad Gita. Tesham Satadayuktanam, then Krishna will give you knowledge from within the heart. But Prabhupada also explains that they come and hear class. If they haven't got the intelligence to read the books, like some devotees find it difficult to read the books. Right? Some devotees are not so inclined to read the books. But how do they learn? They go to classes. Right? Just like you see, you go to Vrindavan, you go to Mayapur, you go to Puri. Then you see lots of devotees, like especially in Kartik and so forth, there's lots of classes going on. Devotees, advanced devotees are speaking in the Bhagavatam, so they go and listen to the advanced devotees. They may not read so much themselves, but they learn about Krishna by hearing of that stuff. But it says that he also carried Prem Bhakti Chandrika and Prasanna with him always, the books of Narottama Das Thakur. Any other points?
Where is Mount Kailash located? Normally you find Mount Kailash is outside the Indian tradition. Sorry, I'm not.
You weren't here last week and we answered this?
I was in Kailash.
Okay. So, have you got a map of Australia? Of Victoria. There's a place called Danbra. Right, very close to there. He was seated on a deer skin and was practicing all forms of austerity.
Because his body was smeared with ashes, he looked like an evening cloud. On his hair was the sign of a half moon, a symbolic representation. The Prabhupada explains in the purport that this is not how a devotee normally dresses. We don't normally dress like this. We don't normally put ash on ourselves and put a garland of skulls and have some snakes and scorpions and matted locks of hair and Ganges water coming out of our matted locks and a half moon and our head, all these things. This is not the ornamentation of a Vaishnava chanting on Rudraksha beads like that. But we understand, because we have the proper Siddhanta, or the proper tattva, the proper knowledge, we understand that Lord Shiva is a Vaishnava. Vaishnavanam Yatashami. He's a devotee. Even though he may appear to be dressed differently, but no, he's not. He's a devotee. But the people who follow him, who imitate him, just like you see a Kumbh Mela, places like that, and you see all the followers of Shiva, and they all dress like Shiva. They put ashes all over the body, and they have matted locks of hair, and Rudraksha beads, and all these things. So they have all the vesh, all of the outward, external appearance of Shiva, but the consciousness is different, because Lord Shiva may dress like that, but he acts like a Vaishnava. Whereas they dress like him, but then they do not follow him in his actions. This is improper imitation of Shiva. It should not be like that. He was seated on a straw mattress and speaking to all present, including the great sage Narada, to whom he specifically spoke about the absolute truth. So he was sitting upon a deerskin. Yeah, or it says here, straw mat, right? So it means very simple, right? Because if you want to attain Krishna consciousness, just like I'm studying at the moment in my personal study, in my private study, I'm studying Bhajana Rahasya by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So he gives a commentary on each of the verses of the Shikshastika. And then the fourth verse of the Shikshastika is Nardanam, Narjanam, Narsundarim, Kavitam Ba Jagadisha, Mama Jamanishwari Bhagavata, Bhagavata Bhaktiya Oi Tuki Twayi. So it means that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, while he's commenting on this verse, then he says that a devotee should not have too much material facility or too little material facility. Because if a devotee has too much material facility, it will distract him from Krishna consciousness. You see, when devotees accumulate too much material acquisition, too many material assets, they lose their focus on Krishna consciousness. Right? Too much wealth, too many material possessions, right? Too many saris, too many shoes. Yeah, too much material acquisition. It distracts one from Krishna consciousness. So therefore it is said one should not live too opulently, but one should not live too simply either. Because if one is too much in poverty or too much austerity, too much renunciation, one's mind will also become disturbed and one will not be able to focus upon Krishna. So one should live simply. Prabhupada's one of his mottos is simple living by thinking. Therefore, one should live simply. I mean, Shiva is sitting on a straw mat. What else do you need to sit on? What else do you need? You don't need much more. What was that?
Chairs.
Chairs, yeah. Chairs, okay. Like that. But simple. You should have just simple, like that. It means you can be comfortable, but it should be simple. So you do not lose your... you do not become distracted to attain the goal of life, which is Krishna consciousness. Right? If you don't develop Krishna consciousness, then what is your point? You have so much material acquisition, but you don't remember Krishna. What is the point? So then, it mentions that Lord Shiva is qualified to speak Vedic knowledge. He's qualified to speak the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the audience is very enthusiastic and qualified. So this is when Amrita comes. Just like when the demons and the demigods, they churned the ocean of milk. And then Amrita, which means nectar, was produced. So similarly, when the audience is very enthusiastic to hear, then the speaker becomes very enthusiastic to speak, then nectar is churned. Or when the speaker is very enthusiastic, then the audience becomes very enthusiastic also. And then what happens? Nectar is churned. Right? And everyone gets realizations about Krishna. So what is Lord Shiva speaking to Narada about? Devotional service, bhakti. He's not speaking about some other thing. Because he is a Vaishnava. Just like the followers of Lord Shiva, what do they speak about? They don't speak about bhakti. Right? They speak about other topics other than bhakti. Because they do not understand the essence of the Vedas. What is the Vedanta? What is the essence of the Vedas? The end of the Vedas. It is bhakti. It is devotional service to Krishna. So this is the ultimate instruction. So Lord Shiva realizes this and he's instructing Narada and the others about this. Any points?
So how do the followers of Lord Shiva were not following his instructions without feeling it verified? Because Lord Shiva takes charge of the souls who are contaminated by the lower ones.
The ones that actually have his personal association, then just as what's happening here is that he's speaking about Krishna, about devotional service. So by having his association, they can be elevated in that way. And those who are following like that, then they have to get the association of a devotee. They have to perform a jnana sukriti, and they have to somehow turn from their improper, like their tantric worship across to Vedic worship. So that will come by some association or some good fortune or some agyata sukriti sometime.
That is when the person of Bhimuni comes into effect. That Bhimuni is saying that anyone who follows Lord Shiva comes to think he is supreme and then become a deist. So then there is no scope for him to become an association of Bhimuni.
No, there's always scope. They have association devotees all the time. It's like you go to Vrindavan. So there's all the Shiva Bhavas. But then they see the devotees all day long. We do parikram, we go past them, they're all sitting there. Right? So eventually, if they get good fortune, they can somehow be purified by taking prasadam like that, and by hearing the holy name, and by associating with the devotees, and somehow maybe they can get some good fortune too.
But does Lord Shiva do something out of his own unique compassion towards this soul? So they are my followers, but they are followers. They are not a useful person, so they are stepping into something that.
Yeah, well, obviously, as a pure devotee, he makes arrangements in people's lives that they will come closer to Krishna, like that. So.
It's also said that if somebody takes birth 6 or 7 times in Shankara's philosophy, then he becomes a devotee. We often hear the statements in ISKCON.
You often hear the statements in ISKCON? I've never heard that statement. I haven't heard it often. I've never heard it. So maybe it's there, but I've never.
Shankaracharya himself actually, he propagated the Chaitanya Bhaja Govinda, Bhaja Govinda.
So being an advisor himself, right? He's propagated this, but I don't know where somewhere it's probably lost.
But they don't follow the
advice.
Mm.
So then it's by association that we change our consciousness, ultimately.
This is interesting though, because there is a foundation called Isha Foundation. ISA, Isha Foundation, is headed by a mystic yogi called Jaggu Vasudev. He's got a huge piece of land in Tamil Nadu. Recently, 2 weeks ago, he held to each congregation and about nearly 1 million of all over the world have assembled and have praised to chant holy names. You didn't mention what holy name was like that. They chant their holy name all through the night, down to the and everyone felt so much energized by the dance and the music.
His left leg was placed on his right thigh, and his left hand was placed on his left thigh. In his right hand he held Rudraksha beads. His sitting posture is called Virasana. He sat in the Virasana posture, and his finger was in the mode of argument. So the whole point of following the yoga process is to yeah, that's the whole process. If one follows the yoga process, he must discover the essence of yoga, and the essence of yoga is bhakti. So Lord Shiva, he is in a yoga posture called Virasana, means he's sitting with his left foot on his thigh like that as he's lecturing. But that is not the end all be all of yoga. Yoga is not a mechanical process which simply finishes with pranayama, right? It ends with samadhi, which is ultimately means bhakti yoga. So Lord Shiva is speaking with a argumentative how do you say it? Yeah, body language, or argumentative. Yeah, his finger in the mode of argument. So I think he's pointing. He's making his points. He's being very heavy. You see sometimes pictures of Prabhupada. Prabhupada is sitting on the Vyasasana and he's pointing as he's speaking. So he's making very strong points like that. So the whole point of lecturing, when we lecture on the Bhagavatam, we are meant to captivate our audience. It means that we should speak in such a way that they become attracted to our presentation. Not that we speak in such a way that they lose interest in our presentation. So sometimes we may have to be captivating, and we may have to be strong in our presentation. But the whole point at the end of the day is that we begin to change the heart of the audience. So we have to speak. And it's just like when a mother feeds a child. When the mother is breastfeeding the baby, she has to be very careful not to give the baby too much milk. Because if she gives the baby too much milk, right, the baby will regurgitate. If she gives the baby too little milk, he will starve. So she has to be expert in her deliverance of nourishment. So similarly, when we preach, we cannot give too much. And we cannot give too little. And we have to give it in such a way that it is palatable. It's accepted by the audience. So you have to ascertain what is your audience. Sometimes you speak more boldly or more strongly. Other times you have to be more soft. Right? According to what the audience needs, like that. But you must captivate the audience. That's the whole point. It means that you must hold their interest and you must change their heart. So that is Lord Shiva's expertise. He is speaking very strongly, very forcefully to the audience, like that. And everyone is captivated there. All the sages and demigods, headed by Indra, offered their respectful obeisances unto Lord Shiva with folded hands. Lord Shiva was dressed in saffron garments and absorbed in trance, thus appearing to be the foremost of all sages. So it describes in the verse that Lord Shiva is in trance, yeah, or Sanskrit is Brahmananda. So he's in Brahmananda. Brahmananda means bliss. The bliss of spiritual bliss. Right? It's not a pleasure from the material world. It's a spiritual pleasure. But it is not impersonal Brahmananda. He's not getting bliss from impersonalistic realization. He's getting bliss from devotional service. From bhakti. Right? So it is Brahmananda, but it is spiritual Brahmananda. It is devotional service.
It is not something other than devotional service. It is not something impersonal. Like that.
Is there anand in Brahma?
Little bit. Just like little tiny bit. Not much. Compared to devotional service. So, a materialist cannot perceive Krishna because of his contaminated senses. So, a materialist cannot understand Krishna. Only a devotee can understand Krishna. A devotee is absorbed in Krishna's service. A devotee is absorbed in Krishna consciousness. His realization is within. Now, sometimes, if we are fortunate, we can perceive that an advanced devotee is experiencing great bliss. Just like Srila Prabhupada, he came to the West and he created so many other devotees. Now, how did he have the potency to create so many other devotees? Because the people understood when they met him, he was experiencing something which was not from this world. He was experiencing something beyond this world. The bliss of devotional service. The bhakti, ras, amrita, sindhu. He was experiencing the ocean, the nectar of devotion. So, a materialist cannot understand what a devotee experiences. But if someone is very fortunate, then they can perceive when they meet an advanced devotee, or this person has something. So, the third paragraph is very interesting. Shekhar, can you read the third paragraph?
Another significant word is yoga kaksha. Yoga kaksha is the sitting posture in which the left thigh is fixed under one's tightly knotted saffron colored garment. Also, the words manunam adhyam are significant here because they mean a philosopher or one who is thoughtful and can think very nicely. Such a man is called Manu. Lord Shiva is described in this verse as the chief of all thinkers. Lord Shiva, of course, does not engage in useless mental speculation, but as stated in the previous verse, is always thoughtful regarding how to deliver the demons from their fallen condition of life. It is said that during the advent of Lord Chaitanya, Sadashiva appeared as Advaita Prabhu, and Advaita Prabhu's chief concern was to elevate their fallen conditioned souls to the platform of devotional service to Lord Krishna. Since people were engaged in useless occupations which would continue their material existence, Lord Shiva in the form of Lord Advaita appeared to the Supreme Lord to appear as Lord Chaitanya to deliver these delusion souls. Actually, Lord Chaitanya appeared on the request of Lord Advaita. Similarly, Lord Shiva has a sampradaya, the Rudra sampradaya. He is always thinking about the deliverance of the fallen souls as exhibited by Lord Advaita.
So what are the points here?
When one does preaching out of compassion, he attracts the mercy of the Lord.
And it says in how Shiva and Lord Chaitanya are connected, they are both for the most fallen souls. Thanks for Lord Shiva, actually Lord Chaitanya, the most merciful incarnation of the Lord.
Mahavishnu is
combined form of Mahavishnu and Sadashiva. These two personalities. So, a devotee, as Prabhupada describes in the purport, concentrates on devotional service. His thoughts are absorbed in devotional service. And when one is an advanced devotee, naturally one thinks of how to deliver other devotees. That is the thoughts of an advanced devotee. Not that we are simply interested in just delivering ourselves, that I want to become Krishna conscious. But actually it is more pleasing to Krishna to think, how can we help others become Krishna conscious? That is the mood of a devotee. That is the mood of Lord Shiva, of Advaita Acharya. How can the conditioned souls be delivered? It is not enough just to deliver yourself. That is not the mood of our sampradaya. The mood of our sampradaya is to deliver as many other conditioned souls as possible. First you must begin to taste, first you must begin to relish or develop a taste for Krishna consciousness. But simultaneous to you developing your taste, you must also share that experience with others. That is the duty of everyone in our sampradaya. Okay. Lord Shiva's lotus feet were worshipped by both the demigods and the demons, but still, in spite of his exalted position, as soon as he saw the Lord Brahma was there among all other demigods, he immediately stood up and offered him respect by bowing down and touching his lotus feet. Just as Vamana Dev offered his respectful obeisances to Kashyapa Muni. So as we've mentioned previously, Vedic culture is based upon offering respect to one's superiors. Yeah. It means any form of respect, being respectful to one's superiors. That is how you advance in Krishna consciousness. Right? You must offer respect to your superiors. That is culture, that is etiquette. That is the way of Vedic life. One must learn to be respectful to one's superiors, and in that way you receive their blessings. And when you receive their blessings, that's how you advance. So that is what is missing in today's modern culture, is that there is not proper respect for the superiors. The superiors are not qualified, right? And nor are the juniors qualified to offer proper respect. Therefore, the system is lost. But in the Vedic system, that is the system. Someone who's superior, he's offered respect. He gives his blessings. His blessing is he gives you Vedic knowledge. That is the system. That's how it works. And then everyone advances. All the sages who were sitting with Lord Shiva, such as Narada and others, also offered their respectful obeisances to Lord Brahma. After being so worshipped, Lord Brahma, smiling, began to speak to Lord Shiva. So Lord Brahma, he smiled. Now, why did he smile? Yeah, because he thought that Lord Shiva would be angry because Sati had quit her body. So therefore he thought Shiva would be very angry. Shiva was very equipoised. But Brahma was thinking, oh, he might be angry. So he was smiling, trying to create a nice mood. So whenever we go to preach, we have to create the right mood with others. Right? Because when you create the right mood, then they will become receptive. So this is the art of preaching. This is the expertise of the preacher. He must learn how to cultivate the right mood with others. What is the best way to do it? Start with kirtan, yeah? What else? Smile when you speak.
Yeah? Start with some joke.
Start with some joke? What else?
You listen to the advantage.
Ask them about themselves. Yeah, that's good. What else?
There's so many ways of icebreaking the situation.
Yeah, there's different ways of icebreaking.
Distribute Shrikant.
Okay, yeah. And distribute?
Shrikant.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Actually, that is the most effective way.
Not in the autumn, but we
begin with Shrikant. Just like we did tonight. And everyone was smiling, everyone's happy. What's the problem? Of course, then the lecture may become a little strange for them. He has to give the true gun at the end. In general.
But let them know beforehand that there is Shri
Gana. Right. Because then they don't concentrate on the lecture.
Yeah.
Best to be keep it secret.
Also give them some instructing stories.
Instructing stories.
Story.
Yeah. Tell them some story. Like the time we had Shri Gana. Shrikant part 1, part 2, right, return of the Shrikant. So many of them. Okay.
So are we having Shrikant tomorrow in the class
room? Anyway. You had enough. You had enough tonight.
You know, I didn't get the phone on.
You didn't get in?
Yeah.
He didn't give it? Really? There wasn't enough for it?
No, I said I didn't get it.
It's left over.
I said I didn't get it.
Now what are you saying?
I said I didn't.
You had too much of it, now you don't even speak properly. What is this? Okay, which verse are we up to? 42. Okay. Lord Brahma said, "My dear Lord Shiva, I know that you are the controller of the entire material manifestation, the combination father and mother of the cosmic manifestation, and the supreme Brahman beyond the cosmic manifestation as well. I know you in that way." So if we do not learn to offer respects to those who are more advanced than us, we will not advance ourselves. So Lord Shiva, he offered respects to Lord Brahma, appropriately. And because he understood how to offer proper respects, right, then he was blessed by his superior. So when we offer proper respects to our superior, then we receive their blessings. And that's how we advance. That is the culture. Just like Srila Prabhupada was accepting the respect of so many disciples, but he himself was respecting his superior, his guru, right? The previous acharyas, like that. That is the mood, like that. That's how we advance in Krishna consciousness. My dear Lord, you create this cosmic manifestation, maintain it and annihilate it by expansion of your personality, exactly as a spider creates, maintains and winds up its web. So the Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma and Lord Vishnu are guna avatars, which means they're extremely powerful. Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, although they may not be Vishnu tattva, they're extremely powerful. They're Shaktyavesh, although it's a different category, it's guna, but they're empowered by the Lord to act as if the Lord was acting himself. So powerful, these living entities. And final verse for tonight. Where are we up to? 44. My dear Lord, your Lordship has introduced the system of sacrifices through the agency of Daksha. And thus one may derive the benefits of religious activities and economic development. Under your regulative principles, the institution of the four varnas and ashrams is respected. The brahmanas therefore vow to follow this system strictly. Just for confusion, I actually did not write anything. Yeah. Because I could not remember where the board was. After too much drink.
That's your favorite, isn't it? Your favorite.
One of them.
Oh,
that's all.
So. I was thinking about that. I asked the question, how the living entities quit that. So what did you ask that question for?
I have a question in the heart-brain system, which we understand that the bodies are subtle. So how did Sati one the subtle body?
I was just thinking how the demigods and daughters they quit the subtle body, but then I remember how Brahma quit his body after his daughter.
This is not the verse we're on.
This was one. Very, very good question.
But it was 1 hour ago. You can answer after class this question, because I want to finish this verse. Okay. Yeah, then you can, after class you two can work it out. Okay, so the Varnashram system is created by
Krishna.
Chaturvanyam Maya Krishna Gunakana Bhagasha, which means Krishna himself created the system of the Varnas and the Ashramas. Now, when that system is followed with the aim in mind of pleasing Krishna, it is called Daivi Varnashrama, as opposed to Asuric Varnashrama. A Sarudvana Ashram means you may follow everything perfectly in Vana and Ashram, but if you are not pleasing Krishna, if Krishna is not the goal, then it is Strama Evahi Kevalam, this useless waste of time. So you see Bhrigu Muni and Daksha, they were doing all their yajnas, all their Vana Ashram, but they were not worshipping Krishna. That was not the goal of the sacrifice. So it was a waste of time, and it degrades the consciousness. You become more materialistic. Whereas if you follow Vana, Daivi Vana Ashram, which is taught by the Brahmanas, and if you follow the system to please Krishna, then everyone becomes elevated. That is the purpose of the Vana Ashram system. So we follow Vana Ashram, to some degree. You know, we're following like Ashramas at least. Vanas is not so clear in this age, but at least the Ashramas we're following to some degree. Now, by following that system, if it's dedicated to the pleasure of Krishna, then what is the result? The result is that we can go back to Godhead. You know, we can attain Krishna, we can please Krishna. Otherwise it is useless waste of time. So tomorrow night we'll go from verses 45 to 53, to the end of the chapter. Srila Prabhupada Ki
Jai.
Jai. Jai. Jai. Srila Jayapataka Swami Maharaj Ki
Jai. Jai.